All right, let me begin by saying that this past fiscal year ended September 30th, 2006, was a very good year financially and also in terms of the progress of the audit, reporting $1.6 million surplus and a $2.8 million working capital. The foundation has now fully restored itself to financial health.
Yay!
It's come a long way since 2001 and 2002 when we were brought in to help give this organization some advice to turn around, and it really was a team effort all the way around. So congratulations to the organization. Also, this year was a very good year in terms of the progress of the audit. The finance and accounting staff at National has... even though they had, a computer setback during the year, there was a couple of months of data lost that had to be reentered, they were still very well prepared for the audit and provided all the schedules that we needed and have everything up and running so that everything is being done timely. And this is the earliest report and completion of an audit that we've achieved in recent history, perhaps ever, a January 24th audit report date. So... that's a very good sign. I remember when I first came in, we were lucky to get the audit done by August 15th, which was the absolute latest extended deadline and barely acceptable to CPB for continued funding. So it's come a long way there, too. I'm going to talk a little bit about the report, the footnotes, see if there's any questions there, and then move on to our audit comments. I'm providing a more detailed level of management audit comments for improvements in internal controls, not because there's anything terribly wrong, but think of it in terms of a car that's running well and it's now time to fine-tune it on the audit side. And then I'll also talk about the audit committee, and I think what's really needed from this board, either directly from the board or through the audit committee, to achieve these improvements in internal controls. First, to the financial report, I touched upon the key numbers. There are some one-time items in this financial report which could mislead you or lull you into complacency about the finances. I believe Lonnie has touched upon this in his report. I'm not going to belabor the point, but there was a $700,000 endowment received during the year. There were $622,000 of donor bequests, which were unrestricted, which are included under listener support. There was $261,000 in write-offs. These were old legal bills going back to 2001 that were disputed and now can be written off because of the statute of limitations. There's no ability there to collect, so I don't mind saying that publicly. and those add up to about $1.6 million, which is the surplus for the year. So without those one-time items, financially, it was actually a break-even, and it's indicative of some fall-off in listener support, which you are well aware. I was very glad to participate in part of that technology discussion, which I do think will open up certainly an avenue for growth for the network. Footnotes 18 and 19 describe the write-off and also on the balance sheet a reclassification of some due-to-froms on the divisional level. Our audit does not audit each division on a standalone basis, so this is not really an audit issue for me, but it is an internal audit issue. And what we have done is reclassify the due-to-from amounts between from current to long-term for the old items. And these are old items which would require board action to resolve. These stem from expenses which were not allocated between the divisions in 2001 when there were when there was a large deficit that year. So you will now see under long-term liabilities or long-term assets, the due-to from numbers. Those are the old numbers, which are going to stay the same numbers from year to year unless there's some audit committee or board resolution on how to resolve that. Under the current assets and current liabilities, those are your normal due-to from numbers, which get cleared out in the matter in the course of 30 days or 60 days if the payroll is paid by National and they charge back to the station for their payroll until those cash transactions clear those numbers out. Those are your normal interdivisional receivables and payables that really do compose the working capital for that particular station. So I wanted to explain that a little bit. I'm going to move on to the report on the audit itself. That's it, right? Yeah. Okay. It was a handout that's in front of you. I'm going to read certain sections, highlight some of it, but leave it to you to go into the details. In planning and performing our audit of the financial statements of Pacific Foundation as of and for the year ended September 30, 2006, we considered its internal control to determine our auditing procedures for the purpose of expressing our opinion on the financial statements and do not provide assurance on internal control. Our consideration of internal control would not necessarily disclose all matters in internal control that might be material weaknesses under standards established by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. A material weakness is a condition in which the design or operation of one or more of the specific internal control components does not reduce to a relatively low level the risk that errors or irregularities in amounts that would be material in relation to the financial statements being audited may occur and not be detected within a timely period by employees in the normal course of performing their assigned functions. We noted no matters involving internal control and its operations that we consider to be material weaknesses as defined above. We did, however, note certain matters involving internal control that are presented in the attachment to this letter for your consideration. These comments and recommendations, all of which have been discussed with the appropriate members of management, are intended to improve the internal control structure or result in other operation efficiencies. This report is intended solely for the information and use of the Board of Directors, management, and others within the organization and is not intended to be and should not be used by anyone other than these specified parties. I'm just going to highlight some key comments which I think may require board action. And essentially, I'm going to. There was a. Let me just. It's easier just read it. We noted many inconsistencies in policies and procedures across the network and recommend that the board approve a uniform policies and procedures manual. We noted both general, i.e., organization wide, and specific, divisional specific, deficiencies in internal controls as follows, and I'm just going to highlight a few. all transactions should be properly coded by department, which goes to functional allocation of expenses between programming, administration, operations, and development. Separate bank accounts should be established for restricted funds. All mail should be opened in the presence of two employees, and a tally of checks received made to be later reconciled to both the general ledger and the MemSys database. MemSys and general ledger should be reconciled on a monthly basis. A consistent dual signature policy should be established for all bank accounts. I'm not recommending a particular policy, just that there should be an organization-wide policy on it. Perpetual inventory records of premiums should be kept and reconciled to MemSys reports monthly. And then physical inventory is taken annually and reconciled. And those are the key main organization-wide recommendations. Basically, except for KPFT, which are new comments, all of the above are repeat comments, primarily due to the lack of an approved and consistently applied policies and procedures manual. And this leads me to the audit committee. The function of the audit committee is really threefold. First and foremost, it's the relationship with this organization and its outside auditor, myself, should ideally go through an audit committee, and we can hash out these issues at the committee level. Secondly, the policies and procedures manual is a charge, really, of the audit committee. Now, back in 2003, a proposed manual developed by Lonnie Hicks was developed. It has not been approved. I'm not saying that particular manual should be approved, but there needs to be consistent policies and procedures. And that would give authority to the audit committee and to management to hold accountability to a certain standard at each division. Things would be done consistently. The things I'm finding are, a certain station has a dual signature on every check, which is a good policy. One of the signatories is the business manager, which is a weakness in internal control. It's somewhat mitigated by having someone else's signature on there. Other stations just have a single signature. I discussed the mail opening. There's no real reconciliation between MIMSIS and the general ledger on any kind of a periodic basis. These are things that I noticed different handbooks that different business managers were using. And someone needs to sort of take all those handbooks and digest them and come up with a consistent. And here's also where you will get into what should be done at national versus what should be done at the divisional level. That could change. I mean, you may have a turnover in divisional staff, which some things might need to be done at national temporarily. But there should be a normal operating procedure for both offices. And that would be the third component of this audit committee, is to really address and try to resolve. It should be a problem-solving committee to resolve issues that arise interdivisionally. Audit issues. For example, those long-term due-to-from accounts would need board action to resolve. The letter to the audit committee stated that there was no disagreements with management over significant accounting policies. There were no changes in accounting policies during the year, and there were no difficulties encountered in performing the audit. So that concludes the formal part of my report, and I'm open for questions. Bob.
Two questions. One about the check
Could
time.
Could you speak up?
Sure. About your recommendations on dual check signing, do you have a recommendation based on other nonprofits' experience as to which officers within the organization are the ideal positions to assign check signing authority to?
Okay, the basic idea behind check signing is that you don't have the person preparing the books, writing the checks, signing the checks. Now, we only saw one instance of that, and in that instance, there was a dual signature required, and the documentation for the checks to be signed in that office were pretty good. So it wasn't... I'm not saying it's a smoking gun or something, but the idea is you don't have the accounting personnel sign the checks. And then aside from that, you need to have you could do it over amounts of a certain amount, and then that would be established at the bank, and that would pretty much enforce that policy. What that amount should be, that's really, I think, for the audit committee, maybe in consultation with the finance committee to decide. And you might have, I don't know which way you want to go with this, but you need to have two signatures with either a national officer, management at the divisional level. Those are your possibilities for those signatures.
Just to clarify, when you said about the threshold, you're not giving a specific dollar amount. Is that the threshold under which one person could sign?
Right, right.
Okay,
right.
Okay, and my second question, you didn't address it here, but I assume you have an opinion on our categories for budget line items, how they're worded. because we found, I'm on the finance committee at the local station board at WBAI, and we have a lot of frustration understanding what terms are used for some of the line items and how they differ from between the local station and the national budget, and it, the definition can be confusing. What is a major donor? I could go through a list, but what I'm asking you is, do you have any recommendation on the necessity of uniform national line item categories?
Well, there should be uniformity if you refer back to the audit report, because those are the line items that are used for the audit and for the Form 990. So oftentimes nonprofits get into trouble by being a little creative in their budgeting process, and in their budget it's hard to compare the budget to the actual numbers because of those sorts of things. If you can give me a more specific question, major donors we're defining as $5,000 or more. That's really an IRS
debt.
$5,000 or more.
That's our really general managers have always told us it was $500.
Major donors are defined by under IRS things for reporting purposes at $5,000.
Okay.
So that could be something you could look at. Yes.
I have 10 questions.
Okay.
if you're serious about that, could you ask the first set, and then we'll go to other people?
Yeah, I'd like to have some latitude as
the chair
of the audit committee to ask a few more questions. I'd like you to, first of all, elaborate a little more on material witnesses. As far as, you know, so that the board, for the sake of the board, understanding what that really means and, you know, what is material, what is not material. And, you know, for us, $10 might be material, and, you know, where do you draw the line?
Oh, okay, let me take the question as we go along. Materiality is a technical definition from my perspective as the outside auditor. Under our audit guidelines, we have to determine a materiality number, which we do a little formula for that. It comes out for this organization at approximately $100,000. What that number represents is that if the financial statements are off by that amount of money in a particular area of assets, liabilities, income, or expenses, then not one line item, but those basic areas, then the financial statements could be misleading because the numbers are off by enough that a reader of the financial statements would be misled. It's different in concept than probably what the inside of the perspective of the organization would be more concerned about significant items. You know, you might have a $500 item that's very significant if it's unauthorized or indicative of some sort of a systematic problem. Also, and when we were looking at internal controls, I wanted to explain, that may be one of your other questions, what we mean by deficiencies in internal controls. We don't consider it to be a material deficiency in internal controls if it doesn't rise to the level of generating systematically a report with a material error. So, for example, we could find something that needs to be reclassified or a problem with petty cash or something, but it's not going to be material to the financial statements, and it's not systematic. So, and almost everything that we find is corrected. These comments don't mean that these are uncorrected problems. They're all corrected. It's just that things that we're finding that we need policies and procedures to prevent them arising in the first place.
Second question is the nemesis. The nemesis system, my understanding is...
Nemesis. that was a value judgment.
Obviously, there are problems at certain stations where they do not really know how to manage this software properly. And also, my understanding is that Alvin Yip has the ability to produce on any request the detail of all the due-to form accounts, which are the problems that the things that we consider problems. So I'd like you to talk about a little bit about the problem with the nemesis. And I'd like this board to ask Alvin Yip to email to the audit committee, detail of all the due-to form accounts or departmental transfer accounts for the past year. That way we can look at them and get rid of our suspicion and move on or make recommendation. I also want you to talk about whether or not it is appropriate to even go back past 2004 to deal with the Dutu from accounts, you know, as a task that we should really, like, you know, take on, especially knowing that we are the level of the knowledge of the board members plus the amount of time we have to spend.
Okay. I believe you asked me four questions. The first had to do with MIMSIS.
Yes.
MIMSIS does have the capacity to generate the reports that the organization needs. Chris at the KPFA office is a MIMSIS whiz, and he could be relied upon to help some of the other business managers if they're having difficulties utilizing MIMSIS. The reports from MIMSIS, I think, are very customizable. Perhaps some standard reports could be established, so it would be easier just to select this report or select that report. And it is, I believe, sort of a confusing process on generating a custom report from MIMSIS. So that's a valid comment, but I do think the organization can get what it needs from that system. The second question had to do with interdivisional?
Yes. if a report can be customized from the MIMSIS just for the interdivisional transfers,
MIMSIS would not be handling interdivisional transfers.
Okay, so then we'll get that from Alvin Yip.
Alvin Yip. Alvin has done an excellent job. He provides a lot of, I meant to mention this before, he provides excellent lead sheets which allow us to do this audit much more efficiently. When we started out many years ago here without Alvin, it was really a much more time-consuming audit, and if we had been charging our standard rates, it would have been well over $100,000 to do that audit, and it would still be close to $100,000 today if it wasn't for the capacity that the National Office has generated with its additional competence in its staff. So that's a big progress. Alvin did do detailed analyses and spreadsheets of the items occurring in the due to from accounts and provide that to the audit committee last year. So I presume he has those and he could just provide them again, and Lonnie is shaking his head yes, so should not be a problem to get those.
I defer and I'll come back.
Okay,
great. I'll go to LaVarne as chair of the Finance Committee and then Sean Renwright.
Thank you, and thank you for the audit, and thank the finance, national finance staff for their hard work, too. I just have a few questions. Since you had mentioned how much the audit would have cost, well, how much did it cost this year?
Well, we're not quite there yet. I expect it to come in. The audit itself would come in at around 60 for this year. There was a little bit extra involved at the request of management in terms of a field trip to KPFT and a little extra time at WBII and more detailed. Everybody was requesting more detailed comments this year, which is music to my ears. I mean, I would have station managers asking me, could you please give us detailed audit comments? I said, okay, thank you. So that's a healthy sign. I'm glad I'm getting the right questions. So it might come in a little over that. That's not including the work on the tax side, which is about $5,000 to $10,000 for the tax returns, California, New York, and federal.
Okay. The next question is, speaking of notes, you have a net. We have had in the Finance Committee, we've had several meetings talking about SCA income, and also it has been an executive session because of some negotiations. So can you just kind of like briefly tell us about, yes?
Do new board members know what the SCA income is? It's the subcarrier allotment, which is the fee we get from leasing subcarriers to the main FM signals in each station signal area. To other providers who use that bandwidth.
And that's like within a certain, range within the main, how far does that range? Never mind, that's
the
okay.
Bandwidth?
Yeah,
we'll just deal with that in the next section.
Okay, so some of the discussions we've had about SCA income have been in executive session in the Finance Committee, but can you just briefly, since that is a note to the audit report. Just tell us a little about, you know, it's decreasing. You know, what do you think the prospects are? What is the basic trend with SCA income, or whatever you can tell us? It's fine.
Well, on the financial report, we have let me go to it. SCA income of $228,000. The year before, it was $386,000, and I believe it is declining. My understanding is that as the contracts expire, they're not being renewed, or at least some of them are not being renewed. As to why that is the case, I can't really speak to that. Lonnie could probably address that issue better than I.
Okay. Just the last question. You talked about the allocation or the coding of expenses to
yes.
major department, and that we've talked about this some ourselves. So in terms of, would you suggest that that would be a critical thing? Because we've talked about it in terms of Great Plains, and I believe we were told that the cost of buying that module was about $10,000 or so. So in terms of, I'm not sure. I'm not really sure of the cost. Lonnie will tell you. But would you recommend, I mean, that Pacifica purchase that module so that we can do that across all stations?
You're talking about the functional expense allocation?
Right, to code the expenses
between
by,
programs,
allocate,
management
right.
general, and fundraising.
Right, and to allocate.
Allocating.
Right.
No, I don't think that's necessary. The system that you have mm-hmm. has a departmental general ledger, mm-hmm. One for programs, one for operations, one for development, and one for administration. Mm-hmm. We use those for the functional allocations. The problem is that some stations just code everything to O1, which is administration, and then at the end of the year, it's up to the national office to reallocate those expenses. With the policies and procedures manual, they would be, of course, given instruction, and they would have an approved procedure, and they should be following it. They could be held accountable for it, for making those codings on a timely month-to-month basis. So you have the system in place already.
Okay, so
can
the
I
solution
ask a clarifying
is
to question? Does your question relate to the idea of allocating staff time
well,
within
it's,
projects?
It's the coding plus the allocate, but, you know, what Ross is saying is that basically, which is correct, that if you have a person trained properly, they will know to code those expenses by the correct category and the correct department. But also, a lot of expenses, like, for example, general manager salary, you allocate some of those, like that salary perhaps is allocated across departments. So that's also something that I would think that at the end of the year is what you also do in terms of allocating expenses across those departments that...
Right. There's percentages used. Certain people are assigned 100% to a department, and their payroll goes exclusively to that department. Some, like the general manager, would be a multi-use or multi-department, and basically it's based on an analysis of that person's time, and then we come up with an estimate of a percentage estimate, and then there's a spreadsheet used to. But once that's done, you could go ahead and use an estimate during the year, and at the end of the year just sort of reevaluate it. But the systems are in place to do that now.
Okay, so basically what you do is that on a year-to-date basis, you just update it each month. So it basically
when it hasn't been done during the year, it becomes an audit problem. At the
right.
end of the year, then Alvin, in conjunction with my staff, analyze it and go through and reallocate.
Okay, so we do. So and let me just ask Lonnie a question. So is there a mod? Did you mention, is there a module to do the allocation or...
The one I was referring to is like a cost distribution module, where you can take a percentage of a person's salary and distribute it across 3 or 4 departments and divisions. That is a separate module in Great Plains.
Oh, okay.
But you don't need to do that. You can do that, as Ross was saying,
right.
Using by hand, so to speak. And you can do it. The only issue is whether you end up wanting to do it every month, or doing it, coming up with an allocation formula at the beginning of the year and use it and adjust it at the end as a part of the audit. So there's a question of when you do it.
I believe the major allocation, which is the payroll,
yes.
Lynn does those allocations each month or
each
paper.
They are done.
Yeah.
But things like the general manager salary or, say, for example, a person's salary that may cut across development and administration, those are usually done at the year end. But you
know. Again, the point is that if you do it on a year-to-date basis, at the end of the year, you will have your number. So instead of trying to do that, apply to that current month, you just do it year-to-date.
That's my audit recommendation.
Yes.
Okay.
That'll be in the policies and procedures manual.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Shonda.
Okay. Would you explain what credit card chargebacks are? And, well, first explain that so I understand what you mean by that.
Just simply, let's say you gave out your credit card for a premium, and then you didn't get your premium after a period of time, and you called up and you said, you know what, just cancel it.
Oh, okay.
Give me a credit back on my credit card.
Okay.
That's what I mean by credit card chargeback.
So if somebody processes that, you want those chargebacks to be signed off.
Yes, they need to be approved by the business manager to be sure that they're booked properly.
Before they're actually processed.
And on
processed,
notice properly.
Right?
Yes.
Before they're actually processed?
No, it doesn't have to be before they're processed, but each month they should be reviewed and approved.
Okay. All right. What is the threshold dollar amount for two signature checks? And is this a standard throughout the network, and is it followed?
Good question.
Thank you.
I would like to know the answer to that question. And I think that is a board responsibility,
yeah,
not my responsibility.
I've been asking that for about 4 years now.
Well,
so
we actually had that question come up on the net. The question was, is the dollar amount threshold for check signing authority requiring dual signatures standard throughout the network? And what we found out...
First is, what is the dollar amount?
Right, and I believe the answer is what he said, and even Lonnie has said, it's different, and we don't have that information yet. We need to get it.
And it
differs from place to place. Levar.
And you'll see on our list of things that we have to do is basically it's what is called a signature authorization level, and that has to be established and applied across the network.
Okay. So would you recommend a signature authorization level for two-party signature? Should it be 10,000? Should it be 5,000? Could you make a recommendation that you think is reasonable?
My recommendation is to have a consistent dual signature policy. I'm not stating at what level.
I see. Okay.
It could be 5. It could be 10. I think these are issues that would go to committee, would go to an audit committee.
All right. Last question. What is a due-to-from account?
A due-to-from account is National pays the payroll for a station, and the station owes National back for the payroll. And until the funds are transferred, you have balances in the due-to-from accounts.
Mm-hmm. And that's standard?
It's standard because you have divisional reporting. Each division has a separate set of books.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have that, you wouldn't even have these accounts.
Okay. And then the question about interdivisional loans I don't think was really clarified, the one that Berthold raised. So I'm re-asking it.
Okay, and that question is?
The unallocated expenses issue.
Okay, going back in the past.
Going
back to 2004. And
if there are any outstanding at the present.
Okay, what's outstanding?
For example, owed to KPFA.
Okay.
Thank you.
let me direct your attention to the report.
Okay.
If you go to page, we have it here now.
While you do that, I want to clarify something. It was agreed when we did this that the concept of owed to wasn't really what we were doing. We were tracking what the transfers had been historically, and that record is a record of, since the inception of the foundation, what money has moved where. But the issue of whether money is owed back to any unit from any other unit is a board policy decision that was never made. There were representations at certain times during the immediate aftermath of the takeover when certain stations were given to understand that the money they were providing to pay down the debt were a loan, and that is separate from what is reflected in these documents, and we have never addressed that issue. So when you look at that number and you see one unit having a negative number and one unit having a positive number, that does not mean that there is a debt from certain units or to other units. That's not what that number means. Would Lonnie care to comment on whether I'm stating that accurately?
I hesitate to go into that document. But let me say this, that one way to understand it as outstanding item, let's just call it an outstanding unresolved item, is that during the hijacking period, money moved the board, the national office took money from the stations. The stations were loaning money to one another. The stations were loaning money to the national office. Now, the second point to understand is that the expenses connected in that period were all more or less charged to the national office account. They were never expenses that were allocated back to a station. For example, accounting expenses, the security guards. I think we spent something like $900,000 at that point.
$450,000 for the security?
No, it's more than that. Mm-hmm. And those expenses have remained on Pacifica's books for the last 4 or 5 years as obligations of the national office. The accounting question is whether the board wants to look at that and say, should we allocate the expenses back according to some formula to the stations? It won't make a difference to the bottom line. I do not regard it as a loan. It is a part of the books that's simply unresolved. The board has options. They can leave it like it is and save blood, sweat, toil, and tears. Because it's in the past, and if you go back there and try to say, as Mark Roberts used to say, we all had dinner, now let's see who had the steak and fight over it. Or we could leave it like it is, or we could vote to come up with a formula to allocate the expenses back to each station, which would in most respects reverse the who owes who what sort of situation.
The point I was making is when you look at the numbers reflected here, those numbers don't reflect just that period. Am I correct? You went far back in our history and gave us the result of transfers throughout Pacifica's history aggregated in those numbers.
We have two numbers. One through September 30th, 2005 as the old number, and then one for the current year, which is the current number.
Okay.
Now, the current number is the real number that cash needs to change hands between the divisions to clear out that account. And that does happen in 30 to 60 days for payroll and chargebacks and those normal things. The old number goes back to the time of the troubles, what Lonnie was referring to, where National paid the bills and just grab the cash from wherever they could grab it, wherever it was in the network, to pay those bills, or the organization would go out of business.
And I'm sure Lonnie would ask you to use a different term for that process, but go on.
So there has not been an attempt to reanalyze that, really, and reallocate those expenses. But even if you did, you would still have some balances. And how would you resolve those balances? Well, let's say, from the station's perspective, National owes us that money, and we want that money. Okay, so you write a check from National to the station, and now it doesn't owe you the money anymore. Can you spend the money? No. It's in your bank account, but can you spend it? Not unless it's in the budget. So it's really a budget issue. Now, if you want to say, okay, KPFA was the hero for this network back in 2001, we deserve our new transmitter first, or something like that. Fine, it's a budget negotiation, I would say. I'm not voting here.
I want to clarify the meaning of that number. My understanding was that number was not simply a question of interdivisional transfers across what you're calling the troubles, and that name's beginning to stick. It actually went back much further.
Yes.
Is that accurate or not? What was the starting date from which interdivisional transfers were tracked as incorporated into the number there in the pre-2005 amount?
Well, they've had to be tracked from day one because you have a separate set of books for each division. So whenever there's a transfer from one division to another, it goes through a due-to-from account.
So when you say day one, you mean 1949?
From day one of this type of reporting, I don't know how far back that goes, but it goes way back.
So I am correct that number does not the pre-2005 number is not reflective of just the transfers that took place. However, in calculating that, you can break out the numbers that transferred in each period of time. Mm-hmm. That data exists somewhere, but that number doesn't reflect it. Go ahead.
Okay, this is the second part of the question. Since September 2005, so that would be fiscal year 2006, have there been interdivisional loans that are not part of the normal part of doing business that are currently outstanding? And if so, what are they?
Okay. I can't answer the out of the ordinary course of doing business question, but the reason we have a new format this year is to help address that question and to give you a place to analyze it very easily. So if you go to the current assets, let's say for KPFA, you've got interdivisional receivables of zero. And you go to the current liabilities for KPFA, and you've got interdivision payables of 120.
Can you say where you are?
I'm on page 17 of the financial report, financial statement.
Okay.
In the CFO section.
It's in your book.
And so people know we've now been doing this for the 45 minutes allotted. Do people want to allocate another 15 minutes?
Yes. So move.
Rip? Is motion to extend by 15. Is there any objection to having a little less time for dinner? But given the way we do this, what happens is you say yes, and when I say it's time to come back, you look at me and keep even.
I'm sorry, what page?
Page 17.
Take that as a no objection.
And where
section
are you now?
Page 17, under current liabilities, you'll see interdivisional payables.
This is page 17.
Of the financial report.
Section 4.
Okay.
It's page 17, the second.
Anyway, it says.
Oh, this is section 4.
Is it 17 of 26?
If you start from the end of 4, beginning of 5, going back, that's the audit report.
So you're going to explain this negative number for 1,656.
That's an elimination number. What I was going to direct your attention to was if you go above that where it says interdivisional payable.
Okay. Could everybody else be quiet, please?
126,424 under KPFA. Do you see that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hold on a second. Because people are talking because they're helping each other find the page.
Okay.
So let's wait a moment till everybody that wants to look is there.
Okay.
And ask attention.
This one. Toward the back.
Is everybody ready? Raise your hand if you're looking and not ready.
Not ready.
We'll wait till the second one.
Okay.
In the meantime, has anybody heard any good jokes lately?
Well, let me make a comment while everyone's looking, which is
this
is what we need the board to get behind with the audit committee to resolve these things in committee. And then we can make it.
Well said. Okay, we're ready. Go ahead.
All right, so there's current liabilities with a line for interdivisional payable, and there's long-term liabilities with a line for interdivisional payable. On the preceding page, you'll see current assets, interdivisional receivable, and non-current assets, interdivisional receivable. And as explained in the footnote, we've divided these due-to-from accounts called interdivisional receivables or payables into two things, a current portion and a long-term portion. So your question was, under the current portion, is there anything in there that's not the normal transactions? Well, the place you would look would be interdivisional payable, current liabilities, KPFA reports, $126,424. These are funds that are going to be transferred from KPFA to National to clear out probably the payroll that was charged to the station for that most recent pay period, but it had not been cleared out as of September 30th. I'm sure it's been cleared out as of today.
So that would be considered normal?
Yes.
Okay.
And then what's the old amounts that just, it's going to be a number that just sits there. Under long-term liabilities, interdivisional payable, KPFA has zero. It owes nothing to National for the old items. And that's where KPFA under the, it's listed under other assets on page 16, interdivisional receivables, it has a $1.4 million number, 1484478. And those are old transactions related to everything prior to October 1st, 2005. And it would cover things which Lonnie referred to as unallocated expenses from 2001 and 2002. And as Dave pointed out, it would also cover anything that would go all the way back that had never cleared out from that account.
Okay, I'm going to go to Rip and then back to Bertolt. Rip?
Yes, well, certainly I want to thank Mr. Wisdom for the benefits of his wisdom on this audit. And we all know that the purpose of an audit is to improve the health of an organization. We also heard yesterday the strengths of our CFO and our financial staff. These are experts that we have hired to work for us. And I think that they need to be empowered to do their job. We know that the auditor states this is the second year of these concerns over the lack of uniform policies and procedures, and therefore I have a motion. I move that the PNB direct the CFO to work with the audit committee to prepare a draft of recommendations for uniform accounting practices to change existing policies and procedures, which would remedy the inconsistencies noted in the general comments of Section B of the January 2007 auditor report, to be presented in 120 days to the PNB for referral to the Finance Committee for review and recommendations, with all recommendations to be brought to the full PNB at its mid-year meeting.
Before there's a second, you can still adjust the language without an amendment. Should that go to the Finance or Audit Committee?
I think we have an Audit Committee to deal with the audit, and then it should go to Finance for their recommendations. That's in the language of my motion.
I'm not certain that you're correct. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, let's take those, and then I'll ask for a second.
Okay.
Okay. I'd like to ask the CFO if there is not a policy and procedure for this situation already that you have presented.
Okay, in that case, I'm going to wait until we get this issue solved.
Yeah.
We'll get the second, and we'll ask that in debate. Ambrose, did you have something on this question of audit versus finance?
The auditor would say the policy and procedures manual has already been transmitted, but this board has not approved it. Is that accurate?
Okay, there too, I'm gonna resolve the question of whether this goes to finance or audit, and then we'll entertain both of those. You said it should go to finance, but from everything I've heard, the audit committee has been tracking these issues much more carefully. As chair of finance, can you comment? And then
I think the original point that Mr. Wisdom had made was that either are, and that Lonnie has pulled together or has worked on this policies and procedures manual, which is on the list of things to get completed this year. So I guess he's pulling it together with a lot of recommendations I know from Finance Committee, which we've talked about these various issues before. So why don't we just ask Lonnie in terms of what is the next step that he thinks that he needs to make to get this thing done.
Okay.
Wait, before the parliamentary procedure requires we deal with this motion. I just want to know audit or finance.
Well,
what's your recommendation?
That is part of the motion.
That is part of the motion because he has already written a policy and procedure that we are looking at for the past 2 years. So, in other words, my point is this motion is asking Lonnie to write policy and procedure that he has already written. You know, what we're trying to talk about is how do we take action on these policies and procedures?
How do we implement it?
Implement it, fix it, make recommendation, ask Ross Wisdom to give us some advice on how to, make it a concrete document that is efficient.
Okay. Given those comments, would you like to withdraw and allow somebody else to put forth the motion of the same agenda?
Actually, I don't think that my motion is any different than what has been just presented, except that mine gives a clear timeline to bring it. And I just heard that it's been in work for 2 years.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is there's a definite timeline.
Okay. So is there a second to the motion by Robbins?
I'll second.
Okay. That's as written. Can you read it again, and then we'll turn to debate?
And I think it doesn't exclude what's been done. And it could be done faster.
Could you just read the motion and
sure. Moving that the PNB direct the CFO to work with the Audit Committee to prepare a draft of recommendations for accounting practices to change the existing policies and procedures, which would remedy the inconsistencies noted in the general comments of Section B of the January 2007 Auditor Report, to be presented in 120 days, maybe sooner, to the PNB for referral to Finance Committee for review and recommendations, with all recommendations to be brought to the full PNB at its mid-year meeting.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to Bertolt and Ambrose's questions and then take the new hand. So, Bertolt, you would ask a question and then Ambrose's.
Sorry, I asked the question.
Bertolt had asked before I asked that. Then I'll come back to you. Okay. Ambrose, your question again?
My question was to Mr. Wisdom. I thought he had said earlier that the policy and procedures manual had already been developed by Lonnie's office and had been presented to a unit of this board, and we haven't acted on it. If that's the case, I want to know whether that's true.
Is that it?
That's true.
That is true?
Actually, the online audience cannot hear what you're holding up, if you could.
I'm holding up the Pacifica Foundation Policies and Procedures Manual submitted by Lonnie Hicks, Chief Financial Officer, Pacifica Foundation, July 2003.
Three?
Well, then why do we need this or any other motions?
Okay. Where's it been?
Yeah.
So can we just ask Lonnie what the impediments are to having this move forward since 2003?
Did you have something else to add, Bertolt, and then I'll recognize Lonnie and then LeVar.
I think LeVar and I have already addressed that. You know, it's being reviewed. There are problems with it, just to use a bad word, that need to be settled. And I think Ross Wisdom also made one or two comments about.
I have comments on this as well.
How to improve it. So I think we have to probably just focus on getting it done. So I like the idea of the timeline, but I don't like the idea of the motion, because that way we can just get together. And the idea is to get together, work out the differences, and figure out how, you know, with the recommendation, how to come forward with a document. And maybe, you know, get from the board another extra 4 hours to go over this with Ross Wisdom, another $800 or more. And then so that we can have a final document that we kind of feel comfortable with. And then that can definitely be done within 120 days, I believe.
Okay. Lonnie. And we have about 4 more minutes.
I think there is a question of the Committee of Origin. And as a rest, whether we're going to commingle the functions of finance and audit. So, recommendation, Ross, you know, should...
Speak up.
I was saying that there is an issue of what is the committee that should receive the policies manager. Is it finance? Is it audit? And I don't want to commingle those functions. There's some legal impediments there. So I'm asking Ross, who should review, assuming both will at some point, the policies and procedures manual first?
All right. It's a good question. It definitely follows under the purview of the audit committee. But I like the motion as it was read, because it originates in the audit committee. It's provided to the audit committee from financial management, but the finance committee gets to comment on it before it goes to the board. And I think you will have the best manual if you take that approach.
Sure.
So I like the motion as it stands.
Okay. Audit, finance, board.
Yeah.
Just want to be clear.
Mm-hmm. As written, he said.
Yeah.
And I think the intent is audit has already gone through this, if that's what I'm hearing.
No, he was saying it goes to audit first from Lonnie,
yes,
and then it goes to finance for comments, and then to the board.
Okay. Point of personal privilege?
Yes. As in the light is in your eyes or something?
I think that the audit committee was, as chair, I'm not going to be afraid to say, was slightly dysfunctional. We met me quorum a few times. I think this document should go to both the audit and the finance committee. We should, you know, like, I don't know if we need to make exception to have both the audit and the finance committee work on this at the same time.
Okay.
You know, as a meeting of the whole of the finance and the audit committee. Otherwise, this will never be done in 120 days that we're
okay.
talking about.
First, two things. First, that's not a point of personal privilege. But secondly, what I'm hearing is the motion does not exclude it being provided to the audit committee first. It just requires that the finance... Actually, the motion as read says it has to come to the board for referral to the finance committee.
Just as an intermediate, could be a telephonic meeting,
okay,
whenever.
But,
just to know
but
it's
whatever
done.
Whatever the case is, the motion as written does not preclude that process.
Point of order.
Yes.
Yeah. Are we taking hands or what?
I'm just calling for point of order. who is taking the notes of the wording of these motions and what's happening? Is there a secretary at work here?
The maker of the motion has written it down, and there have been no amendments.
So the answer is there is no secretary function.
At the moment, there is nobody taking down amendments, but none have been made.
Okay,
LaVarne?
Yeah, I am taking notes, Mr. Chair, but I would get that text from him as he's written it out.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody else noticing the degree of crankiness rising in the room?
I apologize.
No, because people's hands are raised. They're not getting called on, and people are speaking out of turn.
But I am trying to get through the chairs of these committees who are specifically knowledgeable on these points before I go to the other people, and I said I would recognize them.
It's just the language on the motion. Toward the end, I think that somewhere this language should be to apply the uniform procedures. And if you read the motion again, somewhere in the language, there's some language there, and I think the language should be apply uniform procedures. So if you read the motion again, I can tell you where I believe this goes.
Okay, yeah, mine, it said to prepare a draft of recommendations for uniform accounting practices. What would you suggest?
Okay, now go ahead, then what else?
To change the existing policies and procedures, which I thought there were some existing. Maybe there are none existing.
Well, no.
If there's some old...
Which would remedy the inconsistencies noted in the comment section.
It's relevant to this discussion.
Okay. Margaret.
I think Evelyn's hand was before mine.
Okay, Evelyn.
Okay, and Evelyn does have experience as an auditor for the state of Florida for 26 years. The experience on the audit committee may not be relevant to trying to get this done in a timely manner, and it may be most expeditious to have the two committees try to figure out how to do this together because of the understanding of accounting principles. And it may really be to our benefit to have the two try to figure out how to do this together via conference call or whatever, because Bertrol is not coming back to the audit committee. He's going to finance, I believe.
Would you like to make a motion
so
that the process by which this is developed shall include a joint meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to note, is the secretary, is there a second to that?
Substitute motion.
Willing to accommodate.
It's an amendment. But you have
amendment.
Substitute motion.
Okay.
No, you
can't.
Point of order. Order.
Hang on, folks. Hang on. I'm asking the secretary. Do you have the language?
I would like you to repeat what you just said. It's hard to hear.
The amendment is the process for developing the proposal shall include a joint meeting of the Finance and Audit Committees. Okay? Ambrose.
Substitute motion. That the board directs the Finance and Audit Committees to review and approve a revised financial procedures manual for Pacifica Board approval by our next quarterly meeting.
Is there a second to the substitute?
Second.
Okay, we are now speaking to the substitution of this motion for the original main motion. Rip.
I would like some language in there that specifies that the inconsistencies by the auditor are addressed, because that's not in the motion. It
then
is in
who
my
else
motion.
Would like to speak to... Do you want to make a motion to that effect?
Can Ambrose reread his?
Yeah.
And maybe include just that
Let's
phrase
that.
Is all I'm asking.
What's the phrase?
Ambrose,
could you please read auditor's recommendation?
Yes. In accordance with the auditor's recommendation.
That they address the auditor's
no problem.
In
accordance with the auditor's recommendation.
Well, then I support that substitute.
Okay,
we got the deal.
He didn't hear it.
Okay. The secretary has returned. Okay, hang on. I want to inform the recording secretary. We've had a motion by Robbins. Did we have an amendment to that, Mary? Yes, we had an amendment proposed.
And what I've written here is Ambrose Lane's substitute motion that the Audit and the Finance Committee shall review the policy and procedures manual as in accordance with the auditor's recommendation.
The maker of the substitute has written it down, so you don't need to worry about that. So, Ambrose, okay. Go ahead.
That the board directs the finance and audit committees to review and approve a revised financial procedures manual for Pacifica Board's approval in accordance with the auditor's recommendation by our next quarterly meeting. I'll write it down for you.
And that's been seconded?
Yes.
Okay, so who would like to speak to the substitute?
Which is a substitute. Is that, you mean the Ambrose's motion?
Pardon me. Who would like to speak to it in debate?
What I would say is that I believe the substitute does carry forward the intent of my motion and does have the same intent, and therefore I think we're getting to the same goal. That's what we want to do with this, and it clarified a couple things for people. Great, let's do that. I just want to see some movement forward.
Lydia.
But it cuts the timeline about a month and a half, so instead of the 120 days, because there's such a short period between now and March, I don't know if the committees, it's up to the committees whether they think it's sufficient time. Otherwise, I would recommend going back to the 120 days.
Margaret.
Yeah, I support the motion as Ambrose put forward. Ambrose kindly included in his motion the concern that I had since I've been trying to speak for some time. And I would like to say I wasn't a member of the committees, and I respect the work of the committees, but I think as a member of the board, this was a committee before the board, and I would have liked my hand to have been recognized, but my concern has been picked up and integrated into the proposal of Ambrose, which would have helped, I think, to move things along a little further. So just a note to the chair, a bit of a complaint.
Thank you. Evelyn.
I just want to make sure that it's understood that that's the committee's work jointly. Because that word jointly needs to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, well, may we move, AC?
Call a question.
Is there any objection to closing debate?
But were the recommendations incorporated or not?
Yes.
Yeah, they were.
Hold on. Then is there a second? Is there a second to the motion to close debate? Okay, all those in favor of the motion to close debate, please raise your hand.
It'll pass.
All those in favor, opposed to closing debate? The debate is closed. We'll now move first to a motion on whether to substitute Lane's motion for the original main motion and amendment. All those in favor of substituting that language, please raise your hand.
Can you please read that motion?
Can you please read the substitute motion?
Sure.
My apologies.
That the board directs the finance and audit committees to review and approve a revised financial procedures manual in accordance with the auditor's recommendations for Pacifica Board's approval by our next quarterly meeting.
Okay. All those in favor of substituting that motion for the original main motion and then any amendments, please raise your hand. All those opposed? No opposition. The motion carries. Now, all those in favor of adopting the substitute motion? Is there any objection to adopting the substitute motion? It's adopted by unanimous consent. And that puts us at time. Is there anything you'd like to add in closing? Thank you very much.